another episode of Side Hustle City, the podcast that helps you turn your side hustle into your main hustle, with your hosts, Adam Kaler and Kyle Stevie. All right. Well, back again, guys, with another Side Hustle City podcast. And again, as always, trusty co-host, Kyle Stevie.
Well, hello.
So we have somebody special for you today. He is actually a member of CoveWorks here in Covington, our co-working space, Justin Height. How you doing, Justin?
What's up, guys? Yeah, glad to be here, man. I've been following along with the podcast and the Facebook group, and just glad to be a part of the energy you guys are doing and hopefully create some good conversation.
Nice, man. So what's been going on? You got like a million side hustles. Like every time I talk to you, there's a new side hustle. So, yeah. You were here, you were doing some stuff with music. You had like a music platform you were building, and you do graphic design work as well. So you got a couple side hustles that I know about, but what's your new, what are you doing now? What happened to the music thing? What's going on with that?
Yeah, so the side hustle, the joke is that the side hustle has become a side hustle at this point. With music, it was, originally, I think when, you and I had first met, it was, via CoveWorks and mutual friends, lucky to have been brought into the atmosphere that you guys provide at CoveWorks and allowed us to build what we at one point anticipated being a record label. And I think like the rub there was like, we were able to, go into it with the intentions of building a platform that we never had, so. That was kind of the whole hope and dream behind it, was to build something to where we could kind of bring other artists and visuals and photographers, musicians, et cetera, and kind of like do the in-between work that sort of kind of like, sort of falters. You think of anybody who's ever been a musician or been in a band or been had a hand in booking, something seems to happen between the booking process and the day of the show. It's pretty clumsy. I think when you arrive into a venue and you realize, the venue's like, well, where are all the people? And the band's like, well, where's your sound guy? So we saw that as a major problem. So yeah, we began building, hopefully is to be kind of like a procure or own the relationship of that live event structure. And then the pandemic hit, which obviously live events stopped. So we kind of fizzled out for a bit, and it was definitely a big bummer at that point in time.
So essentially you guys were almost like a project management system for shows.
Yeah, essentially we wanted to, own that relationship, be directly responsible for taking care of the artists, making sure the artists were compensated for their time, and making sure also that the venues knew what they were getting into. And there's a lot of work that I think when we agreed, we saw a lot of work that could have been done between that little synopsis period there. But along the backside of that, you mentioned I'm predominantly a graphic designer by trade, and that's my bread and butter. So, there's obviously, I know you're a visual guy as well. There was plenty of opportunity to get in and kind of help out artists and, even the venues with some of their advertising, some of their branding and their messaging. And so that's the part that really struck to me. I'm not really necessarily the best dollars and cents business guy, but when it comes to the passion and the creativity and the hustle, anybody listening to this podcast, I'm pretty sure they're going to identify like that's just what we've got in our blood.
Yeah. I think it takes a special person to want to do something other than just like a 9-to-5 job. I think there's a lot of people out there who have 9-to-5 jobs that would love to do a side hustle, but not all of them pull the trigger. And once you start having kids, you have a family, you need what you think is a stable income, and that 9-to-5 job is that stable income. And I know Kyle can talk to this a little bit. Once you start a family, that's your side hustle for a good bit of your time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're going to sporting events. You're going to, if you're lucky, you're going to sporting events that aren't all day events, like a swim meet or a gymnastics meet. If you got to go do that, go do that. But yeah, well, I never had to do that. Thank God. We, we went to law school at night while I was coaching kids, and my grades kind of suffered, but it was something that I got to do with them. So yeah, the great balance that you have to find between just your 9-to-5 and your family is I mean, that takes some special doing, and then to add something else into the mix, or two or three extra things into the mix, then all of a sudden it takes an extra special, like wife or girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever, husband, whatever it is, that can be supportive of you while you're going out and doing your thing. So, I mean, I don't know. I have a hard enough time, you know, juggling family with work. I couldn't imagine juggling, you know, design and then having to worry about being like an adult babysitter, like you would have to do for bands.
Yeah, right. Because, oh my God, that would be the worst.
That's like the lead. I was a stagehand forever, and that was like the cream of the crop. People were coming in the Riverbend, but when we would do these small side shows, like it was some of these guys are just shit shows. It is like, God, you were doing Jesus' work there, brother, trying to get it together, because it is like, how in the hell did you guys have enough equipment and have enough money just to buy your guitars and speakers? Like they've got guys that are their managers that have no clue what they're doing. They have guys that are on sound that take forever for testing because they don't know what they're doing. You got lighting guys that aren't really lighting guys there. They should be just carrying stuff off of a truck as opposed to being responsible for being an engineer of some sort. It's like, I don't know how you did it.
Yeah, they're the worst.
Yeah, that's what we call roadies. It's every band's best friend. You know, a roadie's job is to do whatever we need. So it's like, yeah, carrying equipment. Hey, we need a sound check. Well, there's no sound guy here. And then, you know, your best friend Dan is sitting across, you know, drinking a draft beer, and he's like, oh, I'll give it a whirl. And it's like, that's, people don't realize, like, unfortunately, that's part of the charm and the allure, I think, of local, you know, punk rock, DIY, but also, yes, I get the authenticity behind it, but it doesn't have to be that way. The show doesn't have to suffer. The, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into a band from the time that, you know, you write a song in your garage to the time that you're at a show performing it in front of somebody. And it's very difficult as a musician, I think, or as an artist. A lot of us struggle when we get up into that moment and to perform, because it's like, oh, this isn't really that big of a deal, but it's like, it really is, because this means everything to you. And then somebody had to design that flyer, you know, that band had the venue had to set aside that date. There's patrons there's a potential market. There's an opportunity to sell merch. There's an opportunity to push your dream forward. And it's like that right there is, you know, I wish I had known that when I was 17, 18, 19, 20, I don't know how many times we booked shows and played in front of pretty decent crowds, probably more people than should have been there, but we missed out on so many opportunities. And that was really, I mean, that's part that I have a hard time even still going to local shows and seeing, because see such phenomenal talent. In my personal opinion, and, you know, I'm all of the opinion that when you go see a local band and, you know, at the Southgate House or in whatever respective Cincinnati, you know, mid-sized city or whatever that you happen to be listening to this, you go see an authentic artist that you believe, you know, in the music, and you're like, these guys are good. Like I now, having gone and lived in Los Angeles, having seen what I needed to see only to come back home, I firmly believe there's not a lot of a difference between that local artist that you're seeing at your local shop playing or your local venue and what you're seeing, you know, Green Day. You know, Green Day represents, you know, so much on the corporate side of things, but it's just the point being there's so much work to be done. And if everybody pitches in and there is the right project management, which that's the term that you threw out, Adam, before it, that's what's missing. And I hate to see so many people invest so much and then feel so little and treat it as less. The reality is, you know, the passion is there. The work is there. It's all there.
I think one of the problems is until you're signed by a label, you're not going to get that project management, right? It's going to be you and probably your girlfriend or, you know, whoever trying to book things and figure things out, or it's a hot mess. And none of these people, I mean, they're all fairly young. I mean, by the time you get to our age, you've given up all hopes and dreams of being in a band. But, you know, when you're young, you're 18, 19, or, you know, you're still in high school or you just started college, you still got that band going, but you suck at project management. I mean, you even said, you know, when you were going to school and you were doing your law classes at night, your grades even suffered there, right? I mean, it was rough. But I mean, what do you call the guy who graduates last in medical school? Doctor, right? So he's still a doctor. You're still a lawyer technically, right? So, I mean, you know, the grades are going to suffer. And I think a lot of times, and I, you know, for me to say this, I sound like a hypocrite because I'm a multitasker. And apparently it's impossible to actually multitask. But I think a lot of people, they don't have like the help that I have. So they can only do one thing at a time. And a lot of the companies that I start now, it's really other people coming to me and saying, hey, I got this idea. We want you to be a co-founder, but we're going to do all the work. And you know, either I just come on as a co-founder and I get equity, because, you know, I've got a history and it's good for them to show, you know, oh, Adam Kaler's on the cap table or whatever, right? Or, you know, some companies I'll put some money into as well. But they're the ones that are majority doing the work. But if you're somebody who wants to do something like what you were trying to do, you got to make money, right? So you probably have a day job. You're trying to get this startup off the ground. And we actually haven't talked to a lot of startup people yet. It's mostly like real estate side hustle people we've talked to and folks that have started, you know, small businesses doing landscaping and things like that. But we haven't talked to a lot of technology-based startup people. And I think Justin's one of those guys. But you also started getting into what? Trading like Robinhood stocks and stuff too, right? Like you hit me up a while back and you were like, hey, Adam, I'm going to get into the game. Like, you know, you see me posting stuff about Bitcoin and, you know, stocks and everything. I think I'm up 106% this year on my stock portfolio. Just the one I trade, right? Mm-hmm. Because I like to take risk, but I like to take calculated risk, you know? And Justin, I think you got into the game and it's kind of like you were good at something else. What was it, like sports, like daily fantasy stuff or something? And you said yeah. You think you that transferred over into your stock skills?
Can you see this trophies back
here? Is that what that is? I thought that was real football. Those are, okay, most people on here, if you're listening to the podcast and you're not watching the video, you're probably, he's got two big silver trophies back there. He's got three bronze, what are those, bronze trophies? And
yeah, then the silver ones look like the Vince Lombardi trophy from the Super Bowl.
There you go.
Yeah, a few of them are gold. So, yeah, you've been killing it looks like, huh?
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's me owning and cleaning up and leaving no meat on the bone for my co-fantasy football league members.
I love it. And I also see some, what are those wrestling belts back there? We just had a wrestler on our last podcast episode. Look at that.
Yeah. It's fun. Those are. That's the 1990s retro WWF World Heavyweight Championship and Intercontinental Championship. You know, those are for me, first of all, as a pro wrestling fan and collector, you know, just two things that I'd always like fixed my, you know, like, how do I say this? You know, the Lombardi trophy, the World Heavyweight Championship. So it's like, I looked at those things as like symbols. You know, and for me to have like replicas of that, it's like the world title I got when I graduated from design school and they asked me to deliver the commencement speech, which huge honor. And I obviously accepted. And, you know, the trick was, how did I make it to the ceremony with the cap and gown, go through photos, go through the speech, and then go to accept my accreditation, my degree, and then unveil the fact that I had the world title underneath.
Nice.
So I go to unzip my gown and that whole side, like, what's he going to do? This is the guy that just gave the commencement, you know, is he nude? No, I had the WWF World Wrestling Federation title and I held it up. And honestly, that was my moment. You know, that was my WrestleMania moment. That was my moment of like, you know, success that I had earned it. The second belt I should mention, I picked up as kind of a milestone for me. I'm going to call it like a personal gift to myself, but it's when I started training, you know, pro wrestling school, which was last June, July, you know, of 2020. And, you know, at the age of 37, I had no idea that I had, you know, that was way past me. You know what I mean? Like, I am old, way too old to be doing that. And, you know, busy with all these other projects, but the opportunity came to train and it literally came out of nowhere. And it was just one of those times in life where I was like, there's really no reason I can't do this if I want. So when I signed up and started to go into training, I was like, I should kind of pick something up along the way and remember this time.
Well, you're talking Kyle Stevie's love language right now, because he's training MMA.
Oh,
Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
BJJ. Yeah, dude. Massive respect, Kyle. That is massive respect.
Well, he says he just goes, he's essentially like the whipping post.
I am. I'm the fat guy. I'm like, not quite Glass Joe, if we're going like original Tyson's punch out here. I'm not like Glass Joe, but
Who was the guy after that? Like two or three, maybe yeah, down.
I'm not.
Right?
I'm not the German guy either.
Okay.
I'm like piston Honda. I'm about that.
Oh,
level.
Okay.
But
there
the
you
first,
go.
But the first piston Honda. I'm not quite second piston Honda. Yeah, I'm like I'm the guy that I'm for the what they call in wrestling lingo. I'm a jobber.
Oh, jobber. Man, jobber.
I'm the guy.
Everybody's got a job.
I'm the guy. I'm like the Barry Horowitz of.
Some people are getting these references. Like some of our listeners are understanding these. So if I become the mayor, would it be weird if I went up and, you know, did the swear, like swear on the Bible? I'm pretty sure there's a thing like that. But would it be weird if I had a belt? Or if after I did that, somebody brought me the belt and I held it up?
Well, dude, I'll would bring that be you weird? A belt if you win. How about this? If you win, I'll bring you a belt.
There you go. Oh, yeah, just run up on stage with a belt and I'll just hold it up. You just put my hand up in the air and I'll hold the belt in the other hand. That'd be we'll sweet.
You could do it as a challenge to other mayors of like-sized cities. Not like physical confrontation, but like, you know, we're going to kick your ass at something, whether it's startups like, or
I was thinking about challenging like the mayor of Pittsburgh. Like what?
Yeah, you could cut a promo on him. You could definitely cut a promo on him and you know, tell him to lay his kahunas on the line.
Yeah, we could like battle over businesses moving to our area, you know? Just
yeah.
Meet me in the ring. Meet me in the ring. What's up? Pick your battle. Are you in a box? You want to wrestle? I'm down. I'll have Kyle train me. If he wants to wrestle, I'll talk to you, Justin.
No, you want hell yeah. You want a different trainer than me.
Where do you train, Kyle? Are you down in Newport on Mama Street by chance?
No, but I know all those guys. Great dudes. That's Carlson Gracie gym down there with Blaine and Max, and those are the guys that used to be at our gym or down there. No, I go Son of Siam off of Donaldson and Erlanger.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm actually located pretty close to that area. I got a couple buddies that train Brazilian. Jamie Filer, Anthony Tank Mansfield, two other artists. Probably cool to throw their name out there as well. They're both, you know, on Instagram, Facebook, hustlers just like us. So, but yeah, they're both into BJJ and pro wrestling, ironically. So,
nice. Well, take us through some of the stuff you've done. Like, I mean, I think. We brought a lot of people who have already like sold a business or the business is already rolling. Mm-hmm. They're making good money. You know, those are the type of people we generally have on, but we haven't really had on anybody who's in the middle of a side hustle or who's.
Oh, we have Pink Gun.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
They're at the very beginning.
Yeah, they're pretty much at the very. They've got some sales though. Like they're doing all right. I saw their spreadsheet. Yeah, they're making some money. But Justin's out here. I mean, he's got the side hustle where he's at the point where, you know, he's probably going to start raising money here pretty soon. So take us through a little bit of like the struggles that I think a lot of people don't understand. And wait, how old are you now, Justin?
I am 37 and soon to be 38.
So take us through some of the like past side hustles you've had that maybe didn't work out. You mentioned COVID was an issue with one of them. But talk a little bit about that and why you're still out here doing it. Like what keeps you going, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate that question because, I actually created a podcast, you know, some time ago, 2017, I think. I was living in Louisville, Kentucky, and, it was called the Failed Artist Podcast. It was essentially based off, you know, predicated on that question. A lot of times you see your successful, I mean, I don't want to just say entrepreneurs, we'll just say successful people in general, you know, just, you know, rock stars, you know, athletes, teachers. I would see these people and like do everything I could to try to engage in conversation, you know, go to a concert, hang out afterwards. And then I got a job working at Bogart's in Cincinnati so that I could just be closer. Like I needed the story. I needed to know what was that in between area. Cause all we saw is, oh, you hear about the story of, oh, he was poor and broke. And then it's like, oh, and then he was famous, you know, and successful. And it seemed like such a, you know, kind of like a facade or a mirage of like, well, you can do it, but it's just like, what was that in between period? So I really dialed in on that and kind of became very focused on that whole struggle part of it. Because, you know, as I found, and this is what I still believe to be true is, you know, those who make it, you know, we don't know when you're going to make it or even if, but the fact is you won't make it if you give up. So who knows how many times you have to get up. So I like that old, Chinese parable, you know, fall seven times, stand up eight. Heard that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, and honestly, the bullet points for me, you know, it's right out of high school, obsessed with music, you know, read Rolling Stone magazine, pro wrestling as well, studied, became obsessed with logos, you know, the Chicago Bulls logo, iconic Nike, you know, Air Jordans, you know, just these pro wrestling pay-per-views, anything that looked visual. And, you know, even like team jerseys and uniforms, and they would come out with like the alternate jerseys. The Bulls black ones are like probably the best of all times, I think, if you ask me, at least in the basketball world. It kind of like made me realize, okay, I am a visual designer. I didn't know what that was at the time. I just thought it was called an artist. But going through high school and then coming out of high school, I went into college for graphic design, and I was playing in a band. And dude, I was going gung ho. This wasn't just, you know, let's just play for friends. This was like, you know, creating press kits, going into the studio, you know, spending way too much money, like way more business than we ever had. Again, we didn't understand project management back then. We're just feeling our way through as kids. But that led me to Los Angeles. And moving to Hollywood was a big, big thing for me. I always felt like if I arrived in West Hollywood and could land on my feet and live there, that I could do whatever I wanted. So it didn't feel like conservative Cincinnati was great for a place like me to become more of like a visual artist, tattoos, rock music. Now, granted, you got to remember, this is going back to 2001, 2003, 2004. So things have changed, you know, we've definitely, you know, changed the social norms and whatnot, and tattoos and all that is more or less an afterthought. But for me at that time, I felt like that's where I needed to be, because that's where I saw it on MTV. You know, everything I saw again was a mirage. So I go there, I make it, sign a lease for, you know, a house for 6 months, travel with some friends, and some of the guys bailed. You know, there's like, this isn't going to happen. You know, we're not.
Were these guys you met there, or were they people that you went there with?
Yes, yeah, people here from Cincinnati. So we cycled through, you know, a good handful of musicians, all really good friends of mine. And luckily, I can say still friends today. But yeah, at the end of the day, I'm the only one that went. Not to toot my own horn, but that was the plan. You know, again, like the plan was go to Los Angeles, go to Hollywood, you know, get an apartment, get a house, start booking shows, start going to shows, start talking to people, start networking. Like, to me, this just made sense.
Like, what's the thing there? Like, I always wondered, these people, they pick up and they go to Los Angeles, they go to New York, they go to Chicago or wherever. Like, what do you do when you get there? So you get an apartment, then you just start networking. Like, in the music world, what is that? Do you just go club to club and try to, like, do you practice for them? Do you say, hey, look, we're a band from Cincinnati, we want to play here? How does that work?
Just what you said. You're around rich, scuzzy people that have money, that see an opportunity to make a buck. And I mean, I hate to say that, but like, to paint a negative light on it, but it's pretty true. Yeah. But yeah.
Are these the club owners or whatever?
Probably. I mean, everybody's connected out there. Like, the three of us right now could agree to just create a band. Well, the thing is, like, this isn't going to be true anymore, because I don't believe that the structure is set up that way. So basically everybody's leaving Los Angeles now.
Well, it's because of different reasons, for tax reasons, housing costs.
Well, entertainment shut down. Like, you can't
do entertainment shut down. Yeah. It's like, why live there if you can't do what you want to do? Like, the whole reason you went out there, you know?
Mm-hmm, exactly. Well, and the point for me was that, you know, I was sitting having lunch at the Rainbow Bar and Grill, which is pretty world famous. There's a statue of Lemmy out there built for Motorhead, and because I guess he used to go there all the time. And well, so point being that, you know, I'm sitting there having lunch with my, at the time, girlfriend, and I look up and I'm seeing all these Polaroids of Axl Rose and Slash and Gene Simmons and Metallica. And they're literally these Polaroids of all these people. And I'm like, I'm sitting in the church of rock and roll here.
Yeah.
I look up and I see the guitar, the Les Paul guitar that Slash threw off his, in the Don't Cry video, when his car flies off. The guitar, they glued it back together and it's on the wall. And I started crying. Like, I had tears, like tears started coming down. And I'm like, because I realized in that very moment, this might've been one of the most heartbreaking things. Like, I realized that I was exactly where I wanted to be. And I had made it, but yet I was alone and I didn't have a band anymore. It was just me and this girl. And I realized at that point, it's like, dude, I made it to the finish line, but I can't walk across it. You know, it's right there, but I have now to turn around and do more work. So I came back home to Cincinnati, and
how many shows did you guys do while you were living out there? I mean, before
none, zero.
None. Oh, because everybody took off like as soon as you pretty much, or didn't come.
Yeah. exactly. Zero. So, you know, the whole, if I remember, the whole conversation was at the time was like, well, we're doing so good here, right? People, you know, want us to play and we're selling so much. Like, we've sold every t-shirt in the box. And I'm like, that doesn't mean anything. I could sell 500 of these if I really, I mean, maybe that's egregious, but I could sell 50 t-shirts to my family. Like, that doesn't really move anything forward. But yeah, so that was like the biggest life-changing moment for me, because, you know, coming back home and going to school, you know, I excelled and, you know, ended up speaking, you know, in my commencement, which I mentioned. And it's just from that point on, it was all design and it was all, I've got to do this myself, you know, like it, not just alone, like partnerships and support of a team is the most important thing. But I also realized that, you know, if at the same time, you almost have to sort of count on yourself. Like, yes, whoever's going to help me is going to help me. But if, you know, this person or this person goes a separate direction, you still have to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
And I just didn't think moving forward as a rock star was going to be worth it. And Kyle, you mentioned, you know, family and stuff like that. And that's the bizarro world to where I'm at. You know, I have people like yourself, very close friends of mine, and people that I, you know, graduated high school with that'll reach out to me and say, dude, I see you and I follow you on social media. You're doing all these amazing things. Keep doing it. And I just want to say back to them, dude, I see your family. Your kids are beautiful. Your wife is beautiful. Like, you guys look so happy. You've got a nice house. So that's the whole trade to this thing is, you know, there's a sacrifice. And like you guys have kind of outlined of being a hustler is you have to kind of decide. And this is what I really would hope people could understand, because I'll preach this until the end is, you know, you can have everything you want, but there have to be things along the way that you're willing to kind of put aside. And it really depends on what you consider is important. And I think that at any point in time, that could be changed for me and anyone else. If, you know, if I had a child come into the world tomorrow and I was expecting, I don't know necessarily that my goals would be the same when I woke up the next day.
Yeah, you're right. There is always and I've heard this from different people. I mean, there's always a sacrifice. And a lot of successful people don't have families. Like, a lot of people that did things early in life, they just get caught, like, you get caught up in success, and you get caught up in, even if you're not successful, you get caught up in the hustle, though, trying to be successful. Mm-hmm. And it can be rough, and it takes a lot of time. And the idea of having a child is just like, I don't have time for that. There's no way I have time for a kid. Like, I've got all this stuff to do. Like, could you imagine spending, you know, this much time trying to take care of a baby on top of everything that I'm doing? So you just postpone things.
Well, the great debate, like not to make it a religious podcast, but I've always had and my dad was always really adamant about this point, that priests in the Catholic Church should be married. He said it would do away with about 99% of the problems that priests have with the sexual abuse, because they're just pin up, like, there's just too many pin up perverts that get shipped from parish to parish. He said, you want to fix that? Let a married man come in, or a married woman. He didn't care if it was man or woman, which is completely anti traditional. But he wanted to have a family. You said, why can't you have a family and run a church? Well, when I lived in Mexico, they're very traditional. And it was very much, no, you have to have 100% laser-like focus with your parish, because there are not just your children. You have to worry about every child that's in your parish. So it's the same idea, is that you have to have that laser-like focus when you want to be super successful. In my
opinion, why they do it. Yeah, that is why they do it, because they say that your flock, just like Jesus had, you know, the in parables, right? Like the sheep, you know, your flock. And they are your family. And like, if you have a family, what's your number one focus?
Your kids.
Your kids, family.
Yeah, you can't, just like you can't run a parish the proper way if you have children.
Especially in a third world country second world or whatever it is now. But
developing as the
developing nation, yeah.
But it's the same idea of becoming super successful. Like, a lot of people cannot divide their attention. It's all in or it's nothing.
Yeah.
They have to be, even because those people will get married and then they'll get divorced within 2 years, because they can't do it. They can't give the attention and of themselves that's necessary to sustain the relationship with someone else. They have to be all in. And then when you're all in on something, you have to not be in at all on anything else.
On something else. Yeah. And you have to have the discipline to say no. That's another big thing. That's one of the things my co-founder Dotloop would say. I mean, he was all in on Dotloop. Like, that's all he did. And he had to learn to say no to a lot of things. And it's just the way it is. And I mean, you know, Justin, you understand that too. I mean, just as well as anybody. I mean, you know, in your 30s now, and, you know, having some, you know, the graphic design thing, having the band, having some startup ideas and things like that. I mean, you know what it feels like to kind of spread yourself thin and also not get the support you had just mentioned, not having people who are all in the same way you were all in. And that can be tough. That can beat you up really bad, because if people aren't in like you're in and they're not willing to dedicate the time and effort to something, there's no way it's going to, I mean, it just can't work. I mean, you could fight through it a lot of times and you could try really, really hard. But I think for some people, if they don't have the support that they thought they were going to have, it pulls the motivation out of you.
Man, there's a lot to unpack with that. Yeah, first what Kyle was saying about the relationships, absolutely true. You know, you dedicate, it's a pie chart, you know, 100% is 100%. And, you know, no matter how you dice it up, it's like, how much time are you going to invest into something means how much time are you willing to take away? Well, the thing you're taking away from, you know, is your kids, or if you don't have kids, it's your girlfriend, fiance, boyfriend. Well, a lot of times that does into, you know, a disconnect. You know, it's extremely hard to have. So there's one thing that you're already kind of not gaining the support of, is having that day-to-day connection, or, you know, a chance to have love or peace. So you could forget about that in some cases. Now, I'm not going to say that is definitely the case. I mean, it's not always the case. Sometimes you do find, you know, people along the way, best friends, you know, lovers, companions, etc., even family members that are like, hey, you know, I'll support this idea. And again, that's what you need, is the support, because when you have no support, you have to constantly dig down deeper and deeper and deeper. And as you're going through life, the odds of it happening, it's like you're on a battle against time, because, you know, as life goes on, we wake up like, I have injuries and pains now that I had never felt before. Oh, you know, so the stakes get higher, you know, and for every day and for every year that I push off not having a marriage and not having a kid actually removes the possibility of it ever happening at all. So that's hurtful and that's hard. And does that mentally beat you up? Yes. You know, is that enough every day to lay your head down at night and say, you know, should I keep doing this? I'll go ahead and be honest, transparent. I think that all the time, you know, if not every night, I'd say most of the time. But I also wake up every day at some point and say, okay, I got to keep going somehow. And then the other part you were talking about, Adam, was the support. And I mean, just going full circle, I know what I didn't have growing up. I didn't have a father. I had a mother who worked sometimes two jobs overnight, third shift. We didn't have a microwave. She didn't have a car. We rode the bus and public transport. I didn't get my first car till I was 18. I had to save up my own money. I had to teach myself how to drive. I mean, I could go on. So what? Like, you know, my problems are my problems, your problems. Like, we all have them. But the point was, I had to understand earlier in life that, and this was a value that I think, you know, I still count on this for hustling and, you know, as an adult and as an entrepreneur, is at the end of the day, no one's going to solve my problem. You know, I have to solve my problem. I have to solve it. I am responsible. But along the way, it's easy for me to look at the things I did not have and I want to give it back. So for me, I want to be a father. Why? Because I'd love to give my son the life that I didn't have. That's easy. It's, well, how can you know what you didn't have? Well, it's easy because I just look at what I didn't have and that's what I want to give. So it's very easy and innate for me to also apply that same mentality towards work and where my, you know, passion is with design and wanting to build a program. Complex Creative represents the family and the support system in the umbrella of the means that I never had, you know, and that we never had. It's everything cool. It's everything that we want and it's everything that it needs to be. But at the end of the day, it's support, it's strength in numbers. And it's, you know, it's a collaborative table that we can all sit down together and eat at. It's a faction, it's an affiliation, but it's support. And I never had that support. And if I had a program like Complex Creative when I was 17 years old, I don't know, maybe I still wouldn't have made it. Who knows? But I think that the chances would have been a little bit more in my favor.
Yeah.
What's Complex Creative?
Yeah. Explain what that is.
Yeah. So originally, you know, as it was supposed to become, you know, this, you know, record label slash live events kind of agency, COVID came, as we mentioned earlier in the podcast, it, you know, that wiped it away. So what we essentially did was we took a step back and we kind of recalculated our approach. So half of it was going to be live events and all that. Like we mentioned, that's kind of like the business side of it. Well, that whole product then was just as it still stands today. We don't know until live events and, you know, this post-COVID situation is works itself into what it's going to be. We'll have to revisit that. But I did start to think, wait a minute, half of this whole idea was a conceptual idea of creativity and, you know, music, musicians and, you know, good branding, good advertising, music videos, just fun stuff, the fun stuff that we were eventually going to get to. So we had an honest call and this, you know, very recently within the last month, and we decided that we're going to go ahead and come out into what we're calling phase two. And we're going to launch Complex Creative as, you know, the creative agency that initially I think got us putting the whole program together to begin with. So the whole point of building live events was to scale out a model so that we could then pitch to investors so that we could prove that we had an ROI. Without being able to do that with a live event scale, there was no ROI. There's no ROI in an indie record label. You know, it's $12,000 overhead essentially, and maybe break even. Who's going to want to pay for that? Like, nobody's going to invest in that. We're going to spend your money. Okay. Well, I mean, I will. Adam, do you have $12,000 to give me? I'll spend it for you.
Yeah, exactly.
So we couldn't do that. And that was why we had to scale out and try to build this product plan. And then we had some other really good, interesting things, you know, eggs in the basket that were in the pipeline as well. That kind of dabbled into the tech and innovation side of things. And I still feel extremely confident about that, but that all depends on the live event structure. So what we've done is flipped it back to the primitive of what it was originally, which was a, you know, creative affiliation, a collaborative, you know. So what we're looking at now, I actually took these notes down yesterday, as a matter of fact, with you know, somebody I was talking to as a potential partner, but since it's right in front of me, the people that we're looking at working with essentially are going to be artists, performers, you know, could be bands, could be anybody that's visual artists, so like other creatives, merchandisers, people who maybe have apparel or any kind of brand that they want to launch. So again, we're just looking at the whole idea of, I have a really cool idea and I would like to do something with it. So those are our people. Those are the people we want to work with. Essentially, we're going to have this ability to put them on our platform. And once joining onto this platform, they'll have resources to all the things that we have created within Complex Creative and our backing company, Left Field Brands. So it actually makes total sense. So it was almost like the dots and the stars aligned for me, you know, a couple of weeks ago when I started to kind of like conceptually say, well, these things all actually fit together. All the work we've been doing in all these areas actually prepared us to get to this point. We maybe cannot go out and do a live event. Maybe that's true. We can't do things like launch an app. We cannot do things like that because there's no ability to be able to, you know, to sell an event ticket. But what we can do is produce good content. What we can do is collaborate with our other artists, figure out what their dreams or intentions are. How far do you want to take this idea? Would you be willing to work with this photographer? Okay. If we have somebody come shoot this, what would your budget be?
Okay. So you guys are almost like creative consultants for, I'm, you know, me running for the, you know, for mayor right now, I hired a firm, and yesterday, I think it was yesterday, we did a photo shoot, right? It was their photographer. It was somebody they found. It was a good price that I, you know, cause we haven't raised any money yet for the campaign. So it's all coming out of my pocket.
Those photos are going to be fire too.
Those photos are going to be good. Kyle actually came down. We pretended like we were crossing the street together and we were talking about some important city business. So that's, yeah, yeah.
Fixing
so
fixing all the problems.
Yeah, fixing all the problems in the city. Cincinnati's going to be super dope. But yeah, so, I mean, they're finding those people. They had a list of people I can call that have historically given to campaigns in the past, for mayor campaigns in the past.
Nice.
So, I mean, they bring that stuff to the table. They say, okay, now this guy, he's like this. This guy hated the president. This guy, you know, loved the president, like, you know, or whatever. This guy hates Congress. This guy's a libertarian and hates both of them, you know, like, so it was one of those things where you have a group of people. I'm getting into this thing for the first time. I don't know what in the world I'm doing. You know, I just know that I think I'd be awesome at it, right? So these guys know exactly what's going on. They have a game plan. So what you're saying is, for what you've got going on in the music industry, right, or for artists or whoever, they could get a hold of you guys, and you essentially have a game plan and a platform that that you can share ideas and things on with them.
Yeah, absolutely. So we want to bring great design into the forefront. So sometimes those are our ideas, and sometimes those are their ideas, your ideas. We're big on community. Complex Creative was established with the mind of sharing resources. Let's get back to the whole trade and barter system. I'm a big fan of that. If you only have $50 to pay me to bang out a quick logo or a flyer, chances are I may tell you, I mean, now granted, I don't want to shout this too loud, but I may tell you to save your $50 and like, can you just trade a service with me? Granted, I need money just as much as anybody else. We all have bills, but you know, if you have the ability to write a blank check, sure. You know, I mean, let's discuss a price. But to me, at the end of the day, it's always been about, well, what types of gifts can we exchange and make this work for everyone? How do we all win as a community? So first, it's identifying our people, you know, or the people that we want to bring onto our platform, you know, visual artists, essentially anybody with a really cool idea. But I want to see something, you know, I see some sort of like a rough draft or a concept. And then, yeah, then let us sit down and, you know, have a discovery. Let us have a talk about it. Let's ponder. Maybe I'm not the right person to work with. Maybe Complex Creative is not the right place. But to be able to sit down and have that conversation, we should at least part ways and have both learn something in exchange. And then I can always pass that to somebody else. And maybe that person sends somebody my way in the future. That's the truth and the honesty, I think, in the networking that we're you know, wanting to stay close to. I mean, it's not really in our best interest to go you know, do direct advertising right now. It's not in our best interest necessarily to be hitting, you know, guerrilla style campaigns or anything like that. Like, we kind of want to pick who we want to work with at this point, because I don't think it's about raising as much money as we can as much it is about like developing great ideas and seeing how far we can get them. You know, and ultimately it's just, you know, uniting creatives who fit our culture into that movement. You know,
so this almost sounds like a Facebook group on steroids, almost. Like, you know, you go on a Facebook group and you're like, hey, I've got it. Like our side hustle group.
I see this blowing up like back in the late 90s. I don't really go to concerts anymore, so I don't really know. But like Warped Tour, we had, it was a collaboration of a lot of, like, they had skaters come in. They had a lot of extreme sports guys on top of them. And they had the merch people that had different stages with indie groups, a ton of indie groups. The small stages were for the local guys, and then you would get the big names. And it sounds like something that is going to start in Cincinnati here with them. If I'm envisioning this actually like the denim wall for the first phase of this project is going to be a local, you know, local festival, where the local guys are going to be able to perform while collaborations happen. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Bill Dottabedian, I was actually talking to him. He's got a platform he's putting out right now, he's already got it, but it's how do you plan? Like, it uses Google Maps, and then you can actually put things like your 10-foot by 2-foot table in a spot and your tent and all this other stuff. Like, there's all these pieces that you can just drag onto the map and plan out how your festival is going to be. Like, it's awesome. Like,
but their festival is going to be kind of like their party for the year. It's not going to be just like a weekend thing. It's going to be like, there's going to be a whole collaboration, whole lifeblood thing going on. If I'm understanding this correctly, like, your whole year is basically going to be getting guys to get on Apple Music or whatever, so that they're getting exposure. And then just for like a celebration, it's like almost like Christmas. It's like, all right, now we're gonna unwrap the gifts and show you what we got publicly, which is gonna be pretty. I mean, I envision that being really cool, because this COVID thing isn't gonna last very long. It's not the right guys in office now. So I gotta assume that that we're gonna start seeing some more positive news from the vaccines and from
we'll see
people wearing masks and all that other good stuff that supposedly wasn't happening before. And then we'll be, you know, and then people will be able to go out and actually live a somewhat normal life again. And I think that's going to happen by, I don't know, at least 2022.
I think a lot of people are planning on that. I know some people that own a big event center company, and they're planning on 2022. They said they think, just from everything that they've done research on, 2022 is going to be a good year for people to start getting back together again.
Yes. What an awesome way for them to start up. Like we've been doing, this is what we've been doing behind the scenes. We've been, you know, we have our steroid induced Facebook group, and we've created these, you know, this is the designs that are coming out of this. This is what the brands that are coming out of this. These are the musicians that are collaborating. Like we got this guy from, I don't know, wherever, he plays kind of like a mix of bluegrass, and but he's got a freestyle guy with him, and they've collaborated and made some really cool shit, and it's all based off of just our group.
So are you guys going to be kind of like the hype guys a little bit too? I mean, for something, I mean, would a concert, like would a Bunbury come to you and say, hey guys, we need to use your platform because we need, this is what our vision is, and then you work that vision through with them? And they say, okay, we need to find these kind of guys, like what Kyle was talking about earlier. Like we need to find skateboarders, we need to find BMX guys, we need to find all this stuff. And then you would work your connections to essentially find all that stuff for them.
Yeah, it could play out that way. I could see a Bunbury type production coming to a semblance like us and saying, we're looking for, like you say, like a niche specific genre, predefined genre of people to bring onto, you know, the show. I could see us creating a platform out of that and creating some sort of a branding message. You know, I mean, my mind goes crazy as like a designer. I start thinking like, okay, colors, color scheme, commercial, like, you know, advertisement, maybe viral campaign. Just there's so many things we could do. With that, I could also see us going to a Bunbury and saying, you know, can we merchandise, or can we, you know, be a vendor, or can we be an affiliate, or can we be a sponsor, or can Bunbury sponsor one of our events? Then said that comes up that maybe we can hype up Bunbury for you. So I think it does become multifaceted. And Kyle, like your Facebook thing is actually right on point, because I did a little like test user research. I was talking to a really good friend of mine by the name of Dave Markey. He used to play bass in a band called Mad Anthony, which phenomenal band in Cincinnati. I think they're kind of the champions of Cincinnati in my heart. And he's since moved on, and he's got a great, you know, video production career. He does a lot of film stuff, but Dave and I have a lot of like mastermind type talks and just friend check-ins from time to time. And he kind of gave me this idea to like, he's like, well, you know, this idea of complex, he's like, why don't you test it out and do the whole laundromat theory? I was like, what's the laundromat theory? He's like, it's where you go to a laundromat and you set up shop and you just kind of study and observe and see, you know, see what happens. It's like, cause if it works in a laundromat, you know, maybe it'll work anywhere. But no, there was something to that. There's a specific reason why that environment, held true. But so basically I took that and I said, all right, well, let's do the laundromat theory and let's put it on Facebook and we're in COVID. So this is right when the lockdown happened. So we're talking March. Right around the end of March, I created this Facebook group called Project C19. So very careful with the wording there. The C was sort of like a nod to complex, and then also COVID-19. So it was like kind of like a wink. But what I did is I went ahead and started adding all the artists I could find, local musicians. Well, you know, and that's not even true. I think I started with about 20, 25. And what it was this idea of what if I place a track? What are we all experiencing right now in COVID? We're bogged down. We're all depressed. We're all worried. We're sitting in these four walls. We're staring, and yet there's no music. Everybody needs it. Any artist and musician is going to tell you right now, you know what you're going to do? You're going to pick up your guitar. You're going to pick up, you know, your turntable. Something's going to come out of this. So we're going to have, honestly, a really nice post-COVID renaissance, I think, of art. I think there's going to be an explosion of creativity and marketing. I think things are going to go nuts. So this is great news for artists and performers, and probably for the promoters as well. So we threw up this group called Project C19. It's still available. It's still up there. People still posting it, but within 2 days, we found people were uploading specific threads of music, specific layers. Hey, I wrote this guitar lick. Use it. Do what you want. Make it purpose. And I put a disclaimer on there stating that if you post content, you're freely sharing it, and you're accepting the fact that it, you know, anybody could download it and promote it, or not promote it, but just collaborate with it. Do what they will. People just began sharing tracks. And next thing you know, there was just, you know, people who didn't even know each other, who had only heard of each other through word of mouth. And, oh, I know you used to be friends with this person. That's cool. Well, here's my keyboard track. Hey, 3 days later, I remixed that track and added drums. And we came up with a pretty nice, interesting bucket of music. And what that told me was that First of all, COVID isn't going to change anything, especially in music. Second of all, the demand for music and the demand for live events is going to go through the roof when we come out of this.
It's going
to
get
crazy. So the demand's there. And yeah, we just had to kind of get set for it.
I like that.
Yeah,
it was a great experiment. And people have, like, you have to be able to use social the right way. Like, I mean, what he's talking about right here, he was able to test out his idea without having to raise any money. You know, what's the idea? The idea is will people share their stuff in a group, right? So that was the test, and it worked. And a lot of people, I think, with startups, they think they have to raise all this money. They have to get all this money together. It's like, no, you need to get creative. I mean, there's a lot of people that started companies before the internet was ever a thing. Now you have the internet. The problem now is you're fighting for attention. So you have to be creative with what you do, and you have to make it interesting. And I think people love to talk about themselves, and they love to share their own stuff, right? They love other people to tell them, oh, you're creative. And I think this is one benefit of what you're doing that's going to help you gain popularity as a platform, is that it's helping people to share their stuff. Everybody wants to share their stuff. Look at Facebook. Look at TikTok. Look at all these things. It's people that want to share their talents, right? And they want to show off. And they want to – you're essentially creating that type of platform, but for a different purpose. I mean, you could essentially be the next TikTok, right? I mean, you could be the TikTok for the entertainment industry.
Yeah, and that's essentially the purpose. I've told personally, and this is going to be – anyone who's ever worked with on the Complex Creative platform as an ambassador, teammate, or whatever, we'll be able to repeat this. Our hopes and dreams with anyone that we work with is that they get too big and they don't need us anymore. Like, that's the hope, is that you turn into a big success. And like, we have agreements to where we can, you know, protectedly work with, you know, third parties, you know, artists or whatever, just for the protection of both of us. But within those agreements, it's also stated clearly, you know, that once those commitments are reached, so we'll just say like a 6-month time frame, and the projects we helped work on with you and collaborated with, you know, we did it together. Like, we want to be tied to it, because ultimately we want you to graduate past us,
yeah,
no longer need us, do great for yourself. Like, invite me to your homecoming party. Like, I'll come to the cookout. And all we want is to be able to say, hey, we helped them. We helped them, you know, like, we helped them. Like, see that right there, just that we helped them, makes me feel amazing, because that's what we need, is the support. Like, that's literally, like, we want to give value. And the only thing we're asking for in return is the collaborative aspect of it. That's all we want. And if you win, we win. And it gives everybody else that we're working with an opportunity to come take a bite out of it. And that's, at heart, that's exactly what we're trying to do with Complex Creative.
So have you found that so far, has it just been musicians collaborating together, or have you had guys that were in the marketing field reach out to musicians and say, hey, this is the visual I got from your guitar riff, or this is the visual I got from what you laid down?
Yeah. So on the Project C19 test ground, I think it got up to 70, last I checked, it was like 73 users. And people at this point are like uploading like live performances, and it's something else now. It's became its own thing. So I've kind of stopped kind of posting in there. But at the time that it was kind of really hot, up to I think the peak sharing, you know, optimal level of that group, it was just anything is anything. I mean, people were literally just throwing things to the wall. It's almost like people just absolutely needed to just have that creative outlet. But also, I will say this as well, it's probably worth mentioning that there are other types of creatives reaching out, and I've had so many great like conversations with, you know, even like pro wrestlers, you know, so that's kind of opened things up. We're looking at pro wrestlers, and this is something I do want to say. It's a fascinating statement to me that pro wrestlers, as I've seen, are the equivalent of like a punk rock DIY band. So when you're going and traveling as an indie wrestler, going on the road, you're literally doing the rounds in your car, doing, you know, pop for pop, show for show, for $20 here, $15 there, maybe no money there. You're selling t-shirts at a t-shirt stand. And to me, I see that connection, and I'm realizing that indie wrestlers are the same as musicians on the touring scale of being, you know, an independent artist. So we've started to create this idea of onboarding pro wrestlers, indie wrestlers, you know, just photographer. I mean, like, literally anyone that's a creative, I do believe we have a facility and a format that is going to work for any creative. And again, I think sharing that whole collective and putting that out is a win for everyone.
Yeah, I like that. Well, Austin, man, tell us how people can find you. I mean, if there's, you know, someone is in the music industry or they're a creative in some way, how do they reach out to you and collaborate?
Yeah, so I'd say the first place to look would be, you know, on our Instagram page is at Complex Creative, and follow us there and send a message. I've removed all the posts since then. So that's Complex, C-O-M-P-L-X Creative. So send a follow and a message. We're actually about to begin an aggressive campaign to start pushing procured content through that channel. But as of right now, there are no images. Definitely, I'll throw my email address out as well, because I think direct contact and direct communication right now is best. And Justin@leftfieldbrands.com. Those are the two best places to find, you know, what it is we're doing. And as far as like making some sort of a connection or whatever. And then I think the only other thing I would throw out at this point is, honestly, check out some of the local talent in Cincinnati. I know that I would love to plug another project of mine. I would absolutely love to. I've got another Instagram channel that I'm banging stuff out. It's totally separate. But the reality is, I think we need to turn inward. And if you've got a band, an artist, a photography, if anybody listening to this has anyone creative that they are friends with, that they see day to day, that is frustrated, looking for work, can't find people to work with, or they just feel like they have got the next big idea, but they don't know where to go, send me an email, Justin@leftfieldbrands.com. Literally, I will directly reply back to you and at least set up a conversation. We want to work with people like that first here in Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky. And then maybe we can graduate to a regional level. And then who knows, the sky's the limit.
Love it. Justin Height, man on the grind.
Yeah, thanks for your story, man. It was fun.
Yeah. Dude,
thanks, guys. It's great conversation. Honor to be on the show. Adam, congratulations on the mayor run. And again, if you win, I'm going to have to bring you a championship belt, and we're going to have to set up a promo.
Oh, Kyle, you got to be there. It's going to be on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be on all the TV channels.
Yeah.
Sweet. All right.
All right, guys.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Have a great day.
Take care, fellas.
See you.